someday they'll get to that real estate.
All right. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to convene the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is May 7th, 2015. And Ms. Deister, if I'm not correct, we have a couple of public hearings and work sessions scheduled.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, you are correct. We have a public hearing and work session scheduled for two policy bills that were subsequently referred to Ways and Means after they came out of the Senate Workforce Committee. They are Senate Bill 242 and 243. I am happy to explain them, but we also have representatives from the Employment Department here who could probably do a much more artful job than I myself.
Well, let's move right to the artful part then. I'm going to convene a public hearing on 242. And why don't you give us a brief introduction of that one?
Okay. Senate Bill 242 was heard in the Senate Workforce Committee. It is a bill that authorizes the Employment Department to intercept tax refunds of individuals who have received overpaid unemployment insurance benefits. And it also adjusts Oregon's short-time compensation, otherwise known as the WorkShare program, so that individuals can't be denied WorkShare benefits because of a change in their work hours from when the plan was initially filed. So fiscal impact statement and a revenue impact statement for this bill has been issued. It is assumed in the LFO recommendation as policy option package 111, which you'll be hearing later when we work Senate Bill 5508.
Excellent. And who will be presenting on this one? Step forward and identify yourself.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, David Gerstenfeld, Assistant Director for Unemployment Insurance at the Employment Department. On Senate Bill 242, I think actually Ms. Deister gave a good description of that. It does make some changes that are required by federal law to keep Oregon's unemployment insurance program consistent with federal law. The Treasury Offset Program is a program that we use to intercept federal tax refunds for certain types of overpayments. Federal law requires that we use that program for a broader array of debts, so some additional types of overpayments and some delinquent tax debts are also required. So this bill makes those federally required changes. And then it also formalizes some changes that we put into operation for the WorkShare program, basically just giving a little bit more flexibility and cutting down on some of the repeated filing requirements or amendment requirements for WorkShare plans. I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Any questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Witt.
Would an appeal toll that recouping of that money?
Chair Gomberg, Representative Witt, there are a number of procedural hurdles requirements that we need to do before we intercept. So before we can refer the debt to that program, we have to give the person a formal decision and give them a chance to appeal. Unless that appeal timeline or the appeal has run its full course, we cannot send it to that program. So if there's an appeal, it would not be sent to intercept the tax refund. And we also have to give some additional written notices that we intend to refer the debt there.
Thank you.
My favorite question, which engenders a variety of different answers, tell me about the emergency clause here.
Chair Gomberg, this is both of these changes that are addressed here are required to make state law consistent with federal law. The WorkShare program in particular, we communicated to the legislature prior to the start of this session, actually. We made those WorkShare changes to the program. There was a federal deadline to have those in place. There's also a federal deadline to have the Treasury Offset Program in place, which was actually January of this year. The federal government understands that state legislative cycles don't match up. So as long as we're moving as quickly as we can, they say that we're consistent, but we felt an emergency clause was appropriate.
Hey, better than average answer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Any comments? Ms. Deister, we have opened a hearing and work session, so
You opened a hearing.
I only opened a hearing?
Yes.
Well, then let me close the hearing, and I will open a work session.
There you go.
And do you have any additional information for us?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as I mentioned, Senate Bill 242 is contemplated in the LFO recommendation for Policy Option Package 111 in the Employment Department's budget. There is a fiscal impact associated that includes four positions, 2.50 FTE, and I can discuss those in a little more detail when we get there, or I can answer questions about that now, but the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends recommends approval, do pass recommendation to the full.
Any questions? Yes, Senator.
The four new positions are going to be paid for by the revenue that is generated for how? I would like to know the fiscal impact of this.
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Hansel, the expenditure impact is other funds, four positions, 2.50 FTE. The dollars are going to basically by, and David hopefully can correct me if I'm wrong, but by maintaining conformity with federal requirements, the Employment Department gets a UI administrative grant, and that is where these dollars will come from.
Chair Gomberg, Senator Hansel, that's correct. We would be paying for this out of either our federal administrative grant funds or out of other funds that are collected from penalties that we assess against people who've committed fraud, and those funds can be used just to pursue overpayments and recover amounts that are owed to the trust fund. So that would be the revenue streams for these positions.
Okay. All right. And just for the record, you are still Mr. Gerstenfeld?
Chair Gomberg, yes, I am.
Thank you. Any other questions? Madam Co-Chair, do you have anything to add at this point?
No, I'm choking to death. No. I don't. Thank you.
A motion?
Oh, a motion. I would move SB 242 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Any? You've heard the motion, colleagues. Is any discussion? Any objection? The motion is approved. Anything else we need to cover on 242, Ms. Deister?
I don't believe so, sir.
All right, then I'll go ahead and close the work session, and I will open a hearing and work session on 243.
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 243 is going to sound quite a bit familiar. The bill authorizes the Employment Department to request to offset unemployment insurance benefits that would otherwise be payable to an individual when overpayment of UI benefits remains outstanding. So basically what that means is they can offset future unemployment insurance benefits that may be due because of previous outstanding overpayments that were made. So this is assumed to have additional revenue to the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund of $221,298 in the 15-17 biennium. That's a net figure, and it is assumed in the Policy Option Package 114 of the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation of Senate Bill pertaining to the Employment Department's budget, Senate Bill 5508. Fiscal and revenue impact statements have been issued. It was heard in Senate Workforce Committee and received a unanimous due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
I have a question. I don't know whether Mr. Gerstenfeld, who's still Mr. Gerstenfeld, as I understand, would be able to answer this or not. But several years ago, there was an overpayment in the UI, if memory serves me correctly, of about $23 million.
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, and I am still Mr. Gerstenfeld, there's kind of an ongoing book, if you would, of overpayments that are there. So overpayments happen, we collect them, I don't have the current balance figure. There was a significant balance a few years ago that we talked to the legislature and others about it.
Well, you've answered my question. I wasn't very artful in asking it. My recollection had been that there was a single occurrence over some period of time when as much as $23 million was paid out. And I remember stomping around in this building saying, what effort are we going to make to get this back? And it was met with kind of a, not by you guys necessarily, but in speaking with colleagues, kind of a benign, we're working on it. You've answered my question, I think, by indicating that you have an ongoing book of business where you have identified recipients who have received more benefit than they are entitled to, and you're working to recover that. Is that a correct understanding?
That's correct.
And I don't know under what circumstances you make accommodation or who the appointing authority is to make an accommodation. You've got a case that's a very obvious hard luck case. The benefit came in. The benefit was spent. There's no way to recoup. Who would make a decision on whether or not to pass on case A and move to case B and case C? How are those determinations ascertained? Because I would suppose anybody who's gotten an overpayment is going to be loath to want to give it back, particularly if the error was on the part of the state. I've had constituents actually argue to me, you guys made the error, I shouldn't have to pay it back, even though it's ill-gotten gain, in my view.
Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, some of that is discretionary. That discretion is vested in the director and, as a practical matter, delegated to the Unemployment Insurance Division to exercise. A lot of that is actually spelled out by statute, though. So we have essentially three categories of overpayments. We have the first category, which is what you described, where someone's overpaid but it wasn't their fault at all. Those we only collect by offsetting against future unemployment benefits. By statute, that's the only way that we're permitted to collect them. One of the things that this bill does is it clarifies that we have the authority to do that reciprocally with other states. And even within that structure, if it is a financial hardship on the person, then we can waive that offsetting for a period of time. The next tier is an overpayment that was caused by the person, but it wasn't fraudulent. They didn't do it on purpose. Those we do go after with traditional collection methods, but we work pretty hard to try to get voluntary payment plans, but we can use garnishments, writs of attachment, and things like that. The third category is when someone intentionally commits fraud to get benefits they're not entitled to, and in those cases we have some more severe collection tools at our disposal, and there's also some other penalties that apply besides just repaying the benefits.
Follow-up.
Perhaps I need to take this offline because I don't know whether or not I will take it offline. It's a very complicated question, and you and I can talk about it in another context. What I would like to ask, though, is what's the profile of, in terms of the money owed, what's the typical profile? What would be a high amount of money that the state was trying to claw back per case?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, right now, I don't have the exact figures. I can certainly get you what the average amount is.
That's what I want.
It has gone down significantly, both because of some efforts that we took to find overpayment situations much more quickly and stop them, and also just because of the federal extensions aren't there anymore. And when there were overpayments before, there was just the potential for them to go on for a much longer period of time. But I can certainly follow up and get you that average overpayment amount.
I'm just curious whether it's hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars, tens of thousands.
I believe it's in the mid-thousands. Typically, the average benefit amount, you know, is between $300 and $400 a week. So a few weeks of benefits and you're into the thousands of dollars pretty quickly.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Johnson.
So let me explore this a little further, if I could, sir. When an overpayment has been determined, do you then take 100% of the next payment, or do you take just a portion of that?
Chair Gomberg, once it becomes final and they owe it, then normally we do offset 100% of the next payments until they're received. Like I said, we do look, we give people an option to say that that would be a financial hardship. And we use the standard that the federal government uses. We just adopted that standard. And if that's the case, then we don't offset as long as that financial hardship is there. It's a challenge for us to do that partial offset. We can do it in some increments, but it's rather difficult to get our systems to be that flexible.
So a claimant would receive a notice saying that they've received an overpayment, that it's going to be deducted from future payments, and if they have a hardship, they should notify the agency?
Correct.
All right. And does anybody not say that they have a hardship?
Chair Gomberg, actually, yes, a number of people do not. We actually have a relatively small percentage currently claiming that hardship. We do give them information about what that means. And typically, we don't get those requests up front. We may get the request down the road when the person again becomes eligible for benefits, and that's when they raise the issue.
Okay. And then you've outlined a couple of different scenarios, whether it's the person's, not the person's fault, it's the person's fault, but it wasn't intentional, and it is intentional. And my and different standards for collection on each of those. My memory is that when monies are owed to the state, to a particular agency, that after your initial attempts to recover it, you can either send it to collections or send it to the Department of Revenue. Is that correct in this case?
Chair Gomberg, that's partially correct. There are some federal restrictions on what debts related to unemployment insurance can be referred to private collection agencies. So we are permitted to do that, and we do, but only once we have determined that we will not be able to collect the debt. And the private collection agencies are not very successful at getting additional money at that point, which is because we're making that assessment pretty accurately. We do work with the Department of Revenue, though, so we use their refund intercept program. So we do work with them to help recover the debts.
So just to repeat that, if I owe the state money under these circumstances and I have a tax refund coming later, the Department of Revenue flags that and recovers the dollars for you?
Correct.
Other questions from anyone? Are we ready for a motion?
Mr. Chair,
yes, ma'am.
I would move Senate Bill 243 relating to the recovery of overpaid unemployment insurance benefits to the full Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you have heard the motion. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the motion is adopted, and Ms. Geister, I think that that I erred in not identifying carriers on the previous motion, or
you. I let you get away with it,
all right,
Representative Gomberg. So I would love to have carriers.
Okay. Well, why don't since it was my mistake, why don't I take 242 and 243 to full Ways and Means, and we need a carrier on the floor as well. So I'll take it to the House. Anyone on the Senate side like to stand up and talk about recovering money that's owed to us?
Sure.
All right. Senator Monroe wants the money. Excuse me. He wants the bills. And I believe we are ready to close the work session on 243. And I open a work session on 5508, the Employment Department budget.
Okay. All right. Co-chairs and committee members, Senate Bill 5508, as I've said, is the budget bill for the Employment Department. You have a packet of materials on OLIS that basically encapsulates the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation. Very quickly, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending a budget of $142,062,193 other funds, $1,520,105,053 other funds non-limited, $158,387,498 federal funds, and $94,832,000 federal funds non-limited, for a grand total of $1,915,386,744, with 1,270 positions and 1,236.11 full-time equivalent positions. The Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending approval of several information technology packages, including Policy Option Package 101, 104, 106, 139, and analyst adjustment that has to do with software upgrades and reprogramming needs, which I've labeled Policy Option Package 804. I'll be going over those in detail when we get to the work session presentation report. Policy Option Package 102 is also recommended. That basically has permanent positions in the Unemployment Insurance Division to maintain efforts with regard to enhanced investigations and auditing to prevent overpayments. The Legislative Fiscal Office is also recommending Policy Option Package 111, which was the subject of one of our policy bills that you just heard. There's a policy option package in the recommendation to allow for 18 permanent and 8 limited duration positions for job placement assistance to clients of other state agencies, and those would be conducted on a fee-for-service basis. Again, that's policy option package 103. Policy option package 107 is limitation and position authority related to the Trade Adjustment Act, and expenditure limitation and limited duration position authority with regard to remodeling WorkSource offices in policy option package 109. And then again, there are a number of analyst adjustments, policy option package 802, 803, and 804, and those are to address issues that have come up since the department's agency request budget and governor's budget was developed back in the summer. So as you know, those are snapshots in time, and this is a dynamic process. So. That's a quick summary. The recommendation also maintains the Office of Administrative Hearings within the Employment Department, and it assumes, per the co-chair's budget framework, the transfer of supplemental Employment Department administrative fund dollars to the general fund. However, I should note that transfer does not take place in Senate Bill 5508. If such a transfer happens, it would happen at the end of session in a program change bill. So
that was,
That's representative.
Yeah, what was the transfer that would happen afterwards?
The program change bill? Was that? Yeah, okay. and that usually occurs at the end of session. It's a budget reconciliation type of process. Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
I think, though, that it's worth noting, because this issue has been the subject of a great deal of conversation, and while it will happen in this omnibus reconciliation program change bill at the end, the $37 million, as I understand it, is money that the agency may have thought about doing some different things with. Ms. Neisenfeld has been hired, in my words, as a change agent and is attempting to do that within the agency. She and I had a conversation about some money available to Regional Solutions out of CDAF, given that there was such a high balance here. I think there are some other legitimate questions about the fact that a balance has been allowed to accumulate that ostensibly is collected from employers for the purpose of helping the agency work through administrative challenges. But this large balance has now been accumulated, and ostensibly in the co-chair's budget framework, the large balance is being redirected to fill other holes in the budget. And I think that, especially for the benefit of some of our new colleagues, this may be the only forum where there is any opportunity to speak to that issue, because the program change bill is not subject to public hearings. And given that you haven't been through the process, I just at least wanted to give the heads up that there, if you wanted a comment on the record, this might be the opportunity to do that.
I would
like the opportunity, before we move this budget, to at least hear from the director with respect to the availability of other programs within employment that speak to workforce training, that there might have been the contemplation that the CDAF money would be used for it, and now that has been extinguished. At least a comment. This decision appears to have been made by folks higher up the food chain than subcommittee chairs. So with that, I...
Please.
Co-chairs Gomberg and Johnson and members of the committee, I'm Lisa Neisenfeld, director of the Employment Department, and I'm going to ask Larry Neiswander, our CFO, to talk about the mechanics of the money. In the governor's budget, the governor's recommended budget, the transfer of CDAF funds had been envisioned as funds that would remain in the workforce portfolio, although not within the employment department. So that $6 million of them would go to regional solutions, or there's another name for a program I'm forgetting right now, as workforce projects, and then $21.9 million would go to what was CCWD, Community Colleges and Workforce Development, through the HECS budget to support workforce programs and things like sector strategies, some important youth projects, and the like, some of the base budget of CCWD as well. That we now have an interagency unit of those, many of those CCWD employees at OED. We're working on these projects together, so they're part of the fabric of the workforce development we feel we need to move forward in the state. And so the unfortunate thing is that they're divided among different committees and different projects, but that was the original intention in the governor's budget.
For clarification, Mr. Chair, this was Governor Kitzhaber's budget.
Correct.
Thank you very much. I have a pretty good working knowledge of the regional solutions requests. And absent these CDAF monies, do you see programmatic money in your agency to do any of the workforce training, or would the applicants for those projects have to necessarily turn now to community colleges and workforce development or other places other than the employment department?
Well, I think most of those projects just won't happen, frankly.
Okay.
We have repurposed a position to work with the regional solutions groups to make sure they're aligned with local workforce investment boards and their strategies. But I do worry greatly that many of our sector strategies and strategies to support target populations in capitalizing on those sector strategies may not occur. We also have a great hole in our strategies around youth in the workforce in this state. We wait until they become adults and have serious problems before we address many workforce needs. And we do have programs for adjudicated youth, but there's a large number of youth who have not worked through the recession and time forward because those jobs have not been available, and they're passing into the workforce with very few skills. So I'm very concerned about that.
I will just conclude my comments by saying that traditionally agency heads advocate the governor's budget. This was a very awkward situation with the change. I don't want to, by the fact that I'm asking you these questions, to suggest that as an agency head you had expressed any disloyalty to the direction that we were headed. You're not. And it is only based on previous conversations that you and I had about regional solutions that causes me to put a little bit of this on the record. I'm not trying to drag you places where somebody could be legitimately critical of, you know, she was coloring outside the lines. These are questions posed by me based on previous conversations and in no way represent an advocacy on the part of Ms. Neisenfeld that would suggest that she was doing anything contrary to the instructions that come from the Department of Administrative Services and the Governor's Office.
Appreciate that.
Representative Wessel.
I was wondering if you anticipate any of the CDAF funds going to employment-related daycare.
Co-Chair Gomberg, Johnson, and Representative Woodsett, that has not been discussed with us. We're not involved in those conversations at all. We had not anticipated it.
Okay.
Follow-up.
and this is probably a question for the co-chairs, how is it that someone with a higher pay grade than the legislature has the ability to transfer almost $38 million out of this into something, the program change bill? I mean, I'm just trying to understand. We are tasked with deciding how these budgets go, and yet someone has taken almost $40 million and decided to do something else with it.
May I take a shot at that, Mr.
Thank
Co-Chair?
You. Thank you.
That is, Mr. Nicewander is smiling because he used to work in LFO and he knows how this works. It took me a long time to figure it out, too. These are generally under the heading of sweeps. They are available money that the co-chairs make a decision as they're putting the budget framework together to hunt for money throughout agency budgets. There have been very controversial sweeps in the past. I recall a time, I think in 2007 or 2009, when $82 million was swept, including money that had gone to the Cultural Trust. I frankly think that had someone decided that they wanted to sue the state for taking money from a trust where donative intent was to support the arts and culture, donative intent was not to fill holes in the budget. But it is one of the anomalies in our budget situation where agencies act with frugality and shepherd resources, and they are rewarded. And this is irrespective of you, Madam Director. They are rewarded by having any available cash swept out. In this case, I think the question is not an appropriate question for Ms. Neisenfeld, who is a good soldier and is doing what she's being told. The larger question is money accumulated that is an assessment against employers. It accumulated more than was needed by the agency, and it is now being repurposed. And this is tradition and practice in the legislature. And again, I would ask correction if I've strayed from the facts. It's tradition and practice in the legislature, and those decisions are made by leadership, including the co-chairs on the House and Senate side.
So
it was 09.
It was 09.
Yeah. Okay. May I follow up?
Yeah, follow up.
Would any of these, this $37.9 million, have been able to have been applied to the new computer system that we needed, that we need and are looking at here in the Department of Employment?
Co-chairs, Representative Whitsitt, I believe certainly they could have, because that could fall under the umbrella of agency administration. The Employment Department did receive about $85 million in what was called Unemployment Insurance Modernization administrative grant funds that they have basically been holding aside for the purpose of the IT packages, mm-hmm. which is where those expenditures are going to come from, so that they don't need to come later and ask for a general fund request for that particular project.
Okay, and just one follow-up,
please.
If I may. Are we looking at any bonding or lottery fund bonding in the department here at all, or is everything already paid for by funds that they've accumulated in any part of the budget?
Co-chairs, Representative Whitsitt, there is no bonding contemplated within the Employment Department's budget. I would say that the IT package 101, what is included in the LFO recommendation is just preliminary planning costs. It expends I want to say around $3 million of the $84 million. In future biennia, as the project gets underway and meets future portions of the stage gate, they will draw from that $85 million in future biennia as well. So that what you see here is not the end of the story. It's merely the beginning. It's assumed to take several biennia.
Thank you very much.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Neisenfeld, I was approached by a colleague at lunchtime who came seeking advice. He had received a question from an employer and apparently contacted your office and was told that it is your policy that you do not respond to legislators when asked questions, and I'm just wondering if that is accurate.
Co-Chairs Gomberg and Johnson, Representative Witt, No, I've never heard that.
All right. Thank you. I will set the record straight.
I do let people who knew more about what they're talking about respond specifically to constituent inquiries about claims and things like that. But they occasionally, frequently write to my office, and I...
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I might just add that I have handled a number of constituent calls that were very specific about UI generally. And when I have called the department, I have been quickly referred to the people that have the expertise to answer them. And as evidenced in my last exchange with Director Neisenfeld, I have approached her frequently, and she has been quite candid, quite accessible, and very helpful. So my experience mirrors her response.
Thank you, Senator. All
right.
Okay.
Before we leave this, Mr. Chair, given that I was feeling liberated to opine and offer tutorials on the Ways and Means process, I think I should add, when decisions are made by the co-chairs, regardless of who the co-chairs are, that theoretically they are responding to achieving a balanced budget, which we are required to do. And for people that are listening or may not be familiar with the whole budgeting process, the governor's budget is aspirational and does not have to balance. Ours must. And there are always in every legislative sessions tremendously more subscription for funds than there are available funds. And so decisions are made about the source of funds and the application of funds. And I think it has been my experience in serving on Ways and Means the entire time that I've been in the legislature that the co-chairs generally try to make decisions based on statewide concerns and on priorities of leadership. So I don't want to leave anybody with the impression that these sweeps are capricious. The name sweep leaves the indication that they could be somewhat frivolous. They are done in an effort to discharge certain policy priorities and to result in a balanced budget for the entire state of Oregon.
Okay, thank you for that. Ms. Deister, where do we go next?
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, with your indulgence, I'll walk through the various recommendations for each of the program areas. And I guess we'll start with the largest one, which is the Unemployment Insurance Division. LFO is recommending a budget of $27,457,097 other funds, federal funds of $120,035,876 federal funds, 631 positions, and 602.02 FTE. So within the Unemployment Insurance Division, the packages that are being recommended, I'm going to walk through the specifics of those so that you know what's included in here. The first one, if you look on page 3 of the work session presentation report, is package 101, which is modernized business services and technology. So this package, as recommended by the Legislative Fiscal Office, is providing resources for contracted information technology professionals in the areas of project management, business analysis, quality management, and assurance services. And those folks are going to help the Employment Department develop a detailed business case and their foundational information technology planning and procurement documentation to modernize basically system-wide all of the agency's IT. As I mentioned previously, these are planning dollars just to get them to the next phase of the stage gate review process. So included in this recommendation are four positions at 1.16 FTE, and those positions will basically be utilized to backfill positions in the Unemployment Insurance Division and that are basically going to be moved to the modernization project to provide expertise in business processes and mapping of existing processes and future processes, so to help them understand how they do business and how the new systems will help them, will meet their business needs. So it's worth noting also that 2 days ago, the Joint Committee on Information, Joint Subcommittee on Information Technology met to review this package, and they have a recommendation for you as well with regard to reporting requirements and how to keep track of this as we go through the 15-17 biennium. And that memo was included in your packet of information. And just really quickly, their recommendation is that should this package be approved by this subcommittee, that the Employment Department continue to work with the Office of the State Chief Information Officer and the Legislative Fiscal Office throughout the project's life cycle, that they follow the stage gate review process, that they develop and update their business case and foundational documents accordingly, that they obtain independent quality management services, that they submit the appropriate documentation and updates, including risk assessments and quality control reviews, to both the CIO and the Legislative Fiscal Office, and that they report back to the legislature during the 2016 annual legislative session and or to interim legislative committees as required. I think that's going to be real important to help understand the trajectory of this project, how well it's going, how soon things can be accomplished as envisioned here. And it's also recommended that, obviously, they continue to request approval to proceed through the next phases of planning and execution per the stage gate review process. So, as well as utilize the statewide resources at their disposal. So that is basically, in a nutshell, the recommendations with regard to the Information and Technology Subcommittee. So I wanted to bring those to your attention.
Ready for a motion?
Actually, if I may, please. I was going to go through all of the packages, and once I've done that, I think then we'll go through
Let's move through those.
Okay. And this is going to take a long time because this is a big budget. I'll try to hurry it along, and please stop me if I'm going too quickly. Okay. Package 102 is also part of the UI division recommendation. This includes nine positions, 8.75 FTE. We're recommending 1.4 million other funds, 77,105 federal funds, and nine permanent positions. And basically, this is for benefit payment control staffing. It's to help the agency continue to keep on top of making sure that the benefits they paid are actually due and appropriate, and they're not having additional overpayments. So it's an auditing function, a control function, investigators, an adjudicator position, and a project manager position as well. And the specifics are detailed in that on page 4 of your work session presentation report. Package 104 has to do with agency security compliance. These are one-time software enhancements, totaling total funds of $913,000 in the UI division. That is also recommended. Part of the LFO recommendation. Package 106 has to do with a new front-end secure access for the Oregon payroll reporting system. It's $1.6 million of other funds. There are no positions or FTE associated with this particular request. This basically enables employers to have a secure sign-in mechanism when they go to pay their UI taxes and make reports online. Package 111 is, again, associated with the policy bills that you heard earlier. That is the four positions and the 2.5 FTE that were detailed earlier. Again, it has to do with maintaining conformity with Federal Department of Labor rules. Okay, and then the first LFO sort of technical package, if you will, has to do with reallocating positions among the different divisions. So this package was originally submitted as a permanent finance plan, but due to timing issues, it wasn't included in the agency request or governor's budget. So we're trying to do that now so that they have the authority to utilize their position authorities in the division where they particularly need them. And so the recommendation is for $541,346 total funds and 1.87 positions within this division. You'll see different recommendations in the different divisions as a result of the puts and takes, but the net, what you're seeing on page 8 of the work session presentation report, is the net of several actions as it impacts the UI division. Package 803 has to do with grant awards that the employment department has received, primarily in the current biennium, basically to the extent that expenditures did not follow the particular trajectory that they had originally assumed in the current biennium, they're going to need expenditure limitation authority to carry over that spending authority into 15-17 because the projects won't be done on the timeline that they originally assumed. So the grants associated with the UI division are listed on page 9 of your work session presentation report, and this package totals $486,000 federal funds and three positions, 2.5 FTE. And that leaves us with package 804, which are carry forward, not related to grants, but they're more technical adjustments of regular programs in nature. For example, with regard to the agency's enterprise architecture plan, they had assumed that they would have that done by now. They haven't had it done. It won't be done until the middle of 15-17, and they need to finish it in order to appropriately plan for UI modernization. So that's a portion of the carry forward request. Another portion of the carry forward package has to do with a call center upgrade. Expenditure limitation was approved for that in the 2013 legislative session. They are almost done with that project. However, the final bills aren't expected to be paid until 15-17, so they need a slight amount of limitation to be carried over into the next biennium to close out that project. And there's software upgrades to various information systems applications that are needed to manage reprogramming and updates. So the total amounts here are an additional $10,953,808 in other funds expenditure limitation, and a decrease of $8,809,788 in federal funds expenditure limitation. And the reason that we have a change there between other funds and federal funds is the expenditures from which some of the agency's expenditures were initially anticipated to be made from have changed due to updated revenue forecasts. So basically what you're seeing here is they'll have slightly less federal funds available than they initially anticipated when the agency request budget was put together, and they're utilizing more other funds revenue than was initially anticipated when the governor's budget was put together. I know that's it's a convoluted package. There are several pieces and parts associated with it. I'm happy to answer questions. I tried to explain it as best I could in the written narrative.
Any questions? Apparently you did a fine job.
Okay. Well, either that or I've confused you all so much you don't know where to go from here. So, moving on to the Business and Employment Services Division. Again, you're going to see a portion of Policy Option Package 101 associated here. These are planning expenditures associated with the Business and Employment Services Division, and they total $1.1 million. And again, as I mentioned earlier, this is coming from that UI modernization money. So that's LFO was recommending that package as part of this division. Package 103 is contracted employment services. Over the past biennia, the employment department has used a minimum of 18 and a maximum of 26 business and employment specialist 2 positions, and they have been approved as limited duration positions in previous biennia. And I believe that this, a similar package, has been included in budgets at least ever since I've been assigned this agency, and I believe longer than that, actually. So at least 4 biennia and possibly longer. So what we are proposing to do here is make a few of those positions permanent. So the legislative fiscal office recommendation is for $3.8 million in other funds expenditure limitation and 26 positions, 26.00 FTE. We're recommending that 18 of those positions be permanent and 8 of them be limited duration for this package. And again, these are funded on a fee-for-service basis. If the contracts don't, or the placement services are not required of the employment department, they wouldn't fill the position. So package 107 has to do with Trade Act adjustment assistance. This is federal funds expenditure limitation and limited duration position authority to accommodate workload resulting from the Trade Adjustment Act. The 13-15 budget included 24 limited duration positions, and the employment department currently has 12 permanent full-time positions allotted to the program. So the recommendation here is for 19 full-time equivalent positions, $2.8 million in federal funds expenditure limitation.
Ms. Deister?
Yes.
Or Mr. Chair?
Please.
I'd love to ask the agency a quick question about that Trade Adjustment Act. My experience in trying to access it at one point in time was that it has such a high threshold. And Representative Witt may have to correct me if my memory is faulty. This was when we were losing jobs at a paper plant in our district. And how many companies in Oregon right now are availing themselves of the trade adjustment opportunity? And if you don't have a specific number, you didn't anticipate this question, I would just like at least a comment about it. If you're the manager of the program, how efficacious you think this is, or how high is the bar for companies to qualify?
For the record, my name is Jim Farr. Representative Gomberg, Senator Johnson, an employer has to be certified to be able to, for the job seekers to be, or the employees to be able to get the benefit from that. And I don't know the exact number of how many current we have. I'd have to get back to you on that.
That would be fine. I'm looking to a colleague for a head nod one way or another, but I think we found it frustratingly difficult to access the program, and I believe that this is a federal program, so we don't have much control over the definitions.
Right, and Senator Johnson, I mean, they have to be certified, and the Department of Labor does that. So, I mean, there's certain criteria that they have to meet to get certification of that. So that's all done through them.
Okay.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you tell us how many Oregonians have been certified for trade adjustment assistance?
Representative Gomberg, Representative Witt, I'd have to get back to you on that number. Okay. I don't have that off with me at this moment in time.
Thank you.
Thanks, and I apologize for not extending the courtesy. It hadn't occurred to me until something Ms. Dyster said caused me to think of it, so I apologize. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
That's fine.
Michelle's fault again.
It's okay. It's Michelle's fault.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
All right, Ms. Dyster.
Okay, package 109. The Employment Department had originally requested other funds expenditure limitation, to remodel its 25 WorkSource centers over the course of the 15-17 biennium with the intent of improving customer service and flow and productivity. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation took the request and pared it back a bit. The LFO recommendation consists of $1.9 million in other funds expenditure limitation and a 1.00 FTE project management position. This amount is estimated to allow for the project manager and for the remodel of approximately 8 WorkSource centers. And the Employment Department is encouraged as part of this recommendation to return to the February 2016 legislative session to report on the progress made on remodeling efforts. And at that point, based upon that, we'll have a better indicator of how many centers they might actually anticipate they are able to achieve in the remainder of the biennium. So that's that accounts for the change in Policy Option Package 109. Policy Option Package 102, again, is that technical position reallocation. You will see that there are 6 positions coming out of the Business and Employment Services Department, and they are being redeployed elsewhere in the agency. So you have other funds and federal funds expenditure limitation associated with those positions coming out of this particular division's budgeted expenditures. Package 803, again, are the grant awards. This $2.4 million in federal funds expenditure limitation is associated with the Reemployment Eligibility Assessment Grant. That is a grant that provides administrative funding to support evaluation, enhanced evaluation of a UI claimant's eligibility and work search efforts. We're recommending $2.4 million in federal funds expenditure limitation. It's been integrated with regular department operations, and staff are trained to perform the interviews, so no additional position authority or FTE is associated with the request. Package 804 is, again, the carry forward and technical adjustments portion. Again, due to revenue, updated revenue forecasts, we have in this division more federal funds that can be utilized. And so as a result, they're looking at eliminating other funds expenditure limitation in favor of using some of that additional federal funds. Again, you've got carry forward associated with the Business and Employment Services Division's portion of the enterprise architecture expenditures and the software change manager expenditures. And also there are capital improvement facilities projects from other funds, services, and supplies to other funds, capital improvement, but the net adjustment of those dollars is zero. It's just merely expenditure categories, so which you probably don't care that much about, but people like me care deeply. So that's included in this request as well. So that is basically the end of the Business and Employment Services Division packages that are included in the LFO request. So if there are no questions, I'll move to the Office of Administrative Hearings.
Right, keep going.
All right. The Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending other funds expenditure limitation of $29,090,375 other funds, 114 positions, and that is 112.29 full-time equivalent positions. Basically, the LFO recommendation obviously does not move the Office of Administrative Hearings to the Department of Administrative Services. So it puts the position authority and the expenditure limitation back in the Employment Department and remains here. Package 101, again, the Office of Administrative Hearings would have a small share of those planning costs, those initial planning costs associated with it. And that amount is $214,031 other funds. And package 139 is the Office of Administrative Hearings Case Management Project. This is other funds expenditure limitation and position authority, 2.5 FTE, three positions, to basically finish up a case management system upgrades that were begun in the 2009-11 biennium, continued in 13-15, and are anticipated to be finished in 15-17. So that will enable other agencies to file cases, receive updates in real time with regard to file paperwork, etc., and receive updates as to where particular cases are in the process. So the next division is the Workforce and Economic Research Division. The Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending $12,766,692 other funds, $3,544 federal funds, 64 positions, 62.75 full-time equivalent positions. Once again, we see package 101. This is the Workforce and Economic Research Division's share of those planning costs, totaling $107,015. Package 802, again, is that position reallocation technical adjustment. We're taking two positions from Workforce and Economic Research and the associated other funds expenditure limitation and redeploying them elsewhere. Package 803 has to do with a grant that was received in, was awarded in June 2013. The authority to apply for the federal grant was granted in May 2013. The department was awarded the grant in the next month. So the amount of expenditures anticipated to occur in the next biennium associated with this grant is 517,000 federal funds. There are three positions associated with the grant, 2.25 FTE. And those positions are limited duration in nature. Carry forward and technical adjustments associated with the Workforce and Economic Research Division, total $4,015,260 other funds, and a decrease of $3,990,360 federal funds, for a net change of $24,900. Again, the changes in the fund types are partially due to the updated revenue forecast. You have here also expenditure limitation associated with the Workforce and Economic Research Division share of the Enterprise Architecture Division and the Software Change Management Projects. There were no Legislative Fiscal Office adjustments to the base or
for packages as actually, I just misspoke. There is one package associated with the non-limited expenditure limitation, and that is package 111, which is associated with the policy bill you heard earlier. So, Senate Bill 242. Package 115 includes non-limited other funds that are anticipated to go back to the trust fund as a result of House Bill 2440, which was a policy bill that was not subsequently referred here. It allows individuals who are receiving unemployment insurance benefits to leave their labor market in order to apply for work without risking the payment of those benefits for the week that they're gone. So that has an impact on the unemployment insurance trust fund that is negligible in the grand scheme of things, but totals $129,120. So with that, those are the puts and takes in terms of dollars and positions that are included in the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation.
Any questions, colleagues? All right, are we ready for a motion?
Yes, sir, I believe we are.
Madam Co-Chair?
Mr. Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation on SB 5508.
Colleagues, any questions? Any discussion? Any objections? Motion is approved.
Okay. So that brings us to the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation on key performance measures. I'm going to cut straight to the chase. If you look at page 3 of the KPM report, you'll see a summary of LFO recommendations. And it's basically, we're recommending that the Employment Department presents a plan for revising their agency key performance measures to reflect the standards and requirements of the Federal Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. There are several reporting requirements that they have as a result of that that could very well work well as agency key performance measures that will limit the amount of data that they have to collect and analyze if the two are married up to the extent that is possible. And that's generally probably in the Legislative Fiscal Office's opinion, a pretty good idea. We're also recommending that a progress report on key performance measure updates should be made to the February legislative session so that before they get too far down the road, folks will have an opportunity to opine on the direction they're heading. I mean, hopefully they'll have some draft proposals. What we don't want to have happen is for them to wait until the agency request budget phase and be sitting here in 2017 and everyone deciding that they don't like those KPMs that are being proposed. So an interim report would help with that.
Senator Johnson.
Before I offer a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on key performance, I want to just say for the record, I'm not a big fan of changing key performance measures. That some agencies have used that to camouflage bad results. In this instance, aligning with the feds, I think, makes all the sense in the world. It will make their job easier tracking. And also, with a new agency director, I think she ought to have the opportunity to put her imprimatur on those things that will be the public measures of their success. And so I am very supportive. And having said that, I would move the LFO recommendation on key performance measures.
All right. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there any question or discussion? Is there any objection? Motion carries.
Okay, so that brings us to the recommended changes to the appropriation bill, Senate Bill 5508. Basically, there are dash one amendments in OLIS associated with the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation, and they result in a recommended budget of $142,062,193 other funds, $158,387,498 federal funds, $1,520,105,053, other funds non-limited, $94,832,000, federal funds non-limited. And there are a number of changes to Senate Bill 5508 that are required to affect that recommendation. If the amendments are generating any questions, I can speak to the specifics of what sections amend what portions of limitation.
Any questions? No questions.
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash one amendments to SB 5508 as detailed in the LFO memorandum dated May 6, 2015. I said that.
Okay.
Right, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Any comments? Any questions? Any objections?
Mr. Chair.
Madam Co-Chair, I think Ms. Deister is out of pages.
I think she's out of pages, too. There's only one thing left to do. Mr. Chair, I move SB 5508 to the full committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Again, colleagues, any discussion? Any objection? Motion carries. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Deister, for all of that.
I'm
listening a little too hard.
Mr. Chair, I would volunteer to do this on the Senate side, and if you want, I'd take this one to full.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
And, Mr. Chair, could you also note for the record that Senator Hansel whispered to me as he was leaving that he was required to be someplace else, and I would ask that he be recorded as excused.
And I believe Representative Whitsitt was excused as well. She missed that vote.
She missed the vote. Representative Nierman voice objection before he left.
All right. So we'll note that for the record. Is there anything else that we need to do on this work session?
Carriers have been named.
We don't have a carrier on the House side.
Oh, that's true.
All right. I will carry this on the House side.
Okay.
That's what Senator Johnson said.
All right. Are we ready to close this work session?
I still have 10 minutes left.
I'm going to close the work session. And colleagues, before you go, I was going to entertain a motion to suspend the rules so that Representative Reed can vote on Senate Bill 242. Somebody say
no objection.
I think we've been moved and the motion's been approved. Representative Reed votes aye on 242. Should I technically have reopened the work session to make that happen?
You're absent a quorum at this point.
Actually, no.
No, sorry.
One, two, three. We're good.
Sorry.
I'm trying to recall. Do I need to suspend the rules to reopen the work session?
I think you're all right.
All right. Well, anyway, I'd like him to vote on 243 as well. So I'm going to entertain a motion to suspend the rules and allow Representative Reed to
vote. So moved.
It's been moved. Any objection? Representative Reed votes aye on 243.
Thank you.
Colleagues, thank you so very much. All of you from the agency as well. Anything for the good of the order? We are adjourned.